The Philly cheese stack is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese, add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions, and even more cheese. The Philly cheese stack. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
If you've been talking about changing your body, if you've looked at implants, but something about it doesn't sit right with you, if you feel more confident, but you don't want to feel fake, unsafe, or pressured, this episode is for you. Because there's a conventional way people don't have enough. It's not just about procedure you choose. It's not what you believe that the procedure is going to fix. Today, we're talking about breast enhancement options beyond implants, including fat grafting and the mind, the body, the journey people go through when they decide to have surgery. So, Jonathan, you're so glad to have you here. Dr. John, do you want to go by Dr. Jonathan or Dr. John, or how
would you like? Most of my patients call me Dr. K, but please call me Jonathan.
Okay. So, you know, I just want to, you know, I'm really excited about this topic because you really look at things from a holistic point of view. So I just want to get right into it. So let's just start here. Like, a lot of people think implants are the only real option. They're, you know, what are not being told to them that they should know?
So implants have been around for a long time, but they've also been associated with a lot of controversy and a lot of health issues. And I personally believe that breast implants are the most significant incidence of medical gaslighting that's happened in our generation against women. Yeah. Unfortunately, since the inception of implants and they started being used in the 60s, there's been health problems associated with them. Yeah. It became most prevalent in the 80s, where a group of rheumatologists, so autoimmune doctors, basically noticed that women were starting to have increased autoimmune symptoms from their implants. Wow. In the 90s, there was a moratorium by the FDA. So the FDA banned all silicone implants. And that's what gave rise to saline-filled implants, which is essentially still the same thing. It's a silicone shell filled with saline.
Yeah.
Then years later, there was a few industry-funded studies that showed implants were safe, which is questionable. Mm-hmm. And even though they are a very heavily studied medical device and not everybody gets sick or has symptoms from them, a significantly large percentage of patients do. And more recently, in the past decade, three significant problems have been highlighted with implants that are consistent. The first is something called BIA-ALCL. It stands for breast implant associated anaplastic large cell lymphoma. Now, that's a lot of words for a rare type of cancer that's associated with implants.
Oh,
okay. Number one, there's a known type of cancer associated with implants. Number two is capsular contracture, which is when the body has a defense reaction against the implant and walls off the implant and creates a really hard, stiff, uncomfortable capsule that can be painful for patients. And the third thing is breast implant illness, which is more commonly recently known as SBII, or a syndrome associated with breast implants. And that has to do with the autoimmune symptoms, anything from joint pain, fatigue, hair loss, anxiety, dry eyes, like a number of symptoms that are associated usually more with autoimmune conditions, but known to be associated with implants. So three reasons why implants have been causing problems, or three medical conditions: that's cancer, capsular contracture, and breast implant illness. The thing that surgeons don't often talk about with implants, apart from those medical problems, is that anyone who gets implants is almost 100% guaranteed at some point later in life to require a second surgery, whether it's to remove and replace the implant, whether it's to just fix the implant, or just to get it out in general. And for something that's an elective procedure, essentially cosmetic, and you could even argue not necessary unless it's for reconstruction after cancer, and even there it's sometimes questionable. Right. That's a lot to imagine to put a patient through, is to say that, you know, with this surgery, there's a almost guaranteed possibility you're going to require other surgeries down the road, 10, 15, 20, 30 years later. And on top of that, it's likely going to cause some sort of immune reaction in your body that may or may not be detectable for years.
Right.
So I know that's a long answer to your question, but in summary, Yeah, breast implants are not safe. I stopped using breast implants 10 years ago. I haven't touched one since, and my focus is on using fat transfer as a safe and natural alternative to implants.
Oh, I love that. Now, let's be real. The most patients aren't confused because they can't choose a size. They're confused because they're trying to choose an identity. So, will you like, let's say, will you still look at me? Will people notice? What if I regret? What if something goes wrong? Am I doing, it for me, or am I doing it because I don't feel it's en I'm enough? Dr. Jonathan, what do you hear patients say in the consultation room and that they don't say out loud anywhere else?
It's a great question. There's a few things that I look for that help me decide if a patient's going to be a good candidate for surgery. And it's not just physical, medical things that I'm looking for safety. It's also psychological, emotional, and almost kind of like spiritual. Like, why is this person seeking to have surgery in the first place? And a lot of things need to be aligned in order for it to be a yes for me to proceed, but also a yes for them. And if the desire to have surgery is coming from a place to please somebody else or to adopt an identity that may not be fully aligned with who you are, that's usually not the best reason to have surgery, because no matter what, at the end of the day, the work that I do is a physical change, but it's not going to guarantee an emotional, psychological change or a change in in the way that somebody else perceived you. So usually, if I catch a drift during a consultation that a patient's looking to have a surgery because of their spouse or their partner, or they're looking for, let's say, a specific type of job or somebody to notice them. Surgery usually isn't the answer because although it can create that change, it's not going to guarantee a certain result. And it's very, very much about a personal decision to change or improve a part of your body, as well as to have the right psychology online to meet your body.
I love that. Now, let's simplify this. When someone is considering implants, what are they really, what are really the decision points, that they have to look at?
So when patients come to see me, so the first thing I tell them, I don't do implants. So if they're really adamant about having implants, I will help guide them towards somebody who will do that for them, or help them understand why I think fat grafting is a better, safer option. When patients are seeking implants specifically, usually it's a very specific type of look that fat grafting doesn't always achieve. It's not about size, it's about shape. Implants are more commonly associated with the creating that sort of a bit more artificial look with fullness at the top of the breast, a lot more cleavage per se. Fat grafting can still achieve close to that, but fat grafting is about making a much more natural aesthetic, about enhancing the already existing shape of the breast. So when patients tell me, like, I want to go up 2, 3 sizes, and I want it to look like this, and it's usually like a very full at the top breast, usually an implant is a better option. However, with multiple rounds of fat grafting, you can still get there. It just requires a bit more patience.
I feel like a lot of people get distorted with marketing and Instagram and and they kind of like they get influenced by other people that they see sometimes. What are some of the most common misconceptions that you find
Do you mean about plastic surgery in general or with fat grafting
with
or
fat grafting?
Right. So most common misconceptions are the fat doesn't survive, and it's not going to be as good as implants. And I've dedicated my career, my surgical practice, to working and perfecting on these techniques. So although there is some truth to that, I think in inexperienced hands or people that don't do a lot of fat grafting, it's common to get results like that. Like with anything, if you go to somebody, see somebody who doesn't do a lot of a certain thing, like, if you take your car to a mechanic and they only change a certain kind of tire, it's probably not best to go see them for a windshield or something like that. But not to overly simplify it, but everybody has their specialty. So in my hands, in my work, this is all I do. This is what I focus on. And with the right technique, you can actually achieve quite high survival of fat, and it is, I would say, as good, if not better, than breast implants. So survival of fat is important. Another common myth and thing that I hear is that the fat doesn't survive. That's partly true. 50 to 80% of the fat will survive. So what that means is during the procedure, I overfill, knowing that not all of it will survive, and it'll settle down to a happy medium. What that means is during after surgery, it can be a little sad for patients because they watch the size of the breasts go down. However,
Yeah.
it still ends up being significantly larger than where we started.
Right.
Another common myth is that that fat grafting to the breast can either increase the rate of breast cancer, or it can mess with mammogram results. So the first one is absolutely not true. It doesn't increase or change the rate of the baseline rate of breast cancer. In fact, fat grafting was used as a tool to help women after breast cancer to help with breast reconstruction. The second thing is it doesn't mess with mammograms. Radiologists are well trained and understand now that what fat grafting results look like versus actual cancer on future mammograms.
Now, what questions should a patient ask a surgeon, that people really don't ask, but they should when it comes to this procedure?
Everything before and after the surgery is as important as the surgery itself. I have a sort of like a laundry list of questions I always think about if I was going to give my sister, mother, spouse, family, like any family member going in for surgery. This is the stuff you want to know from your surgeon. So, first of all, you want to know that they are the GOAT. They're the greatest of all time at what they do. You want to know that they could do the surgery in their sleep. They've seen every complication. Being a good surgeon doesn't mean you don't have complications. Being a good surgeon means you've done enough surgery to have seen almost every complication, know how to handle it. So that's important. And everybody who operates a lot understands that there's, that's what that's in addition to the expertise of somebody who's a master of their craft, you want to make sure they can take care of you if something doesn't go right. So that's an important question to ask. Like what are the things that can go wrong? How would you manage them? How often do these things happen? And somebody who does a lot of a certain procedure is going to know because they've seen it all. Yeah. And then before and after surgery, you want to know how to best prepare. And it's usually I always say the staff that work with the surgeon in the surgeon's office is a reflection of who they are and how their practice is run. So if communication is coherent, good vibes, things are ready, things get done when they say they're going to be done before surgery, it's usually a good indication things are going to be good afterwards. You want to make sure you've got a regular follow-up. You don't want to be operated on and then left in the dust. So it's important to be able to have regular contact with your surgeon. All of my patients get my personal cell number, and I like to hear from them regularly. So there's, that's super important. Apart from that, in terms of making sure you're choosing somebody who's skilled, before and after pictures are very helpful. But keep in mind, everybody gets to choose the kind of before and after they put out. So it's nice to see. It's actually when I see a surgeon kind of post a mediocre, what looks like a mediocre result among many good results, that to me is a reflection of honesty. I'm like, oh, like that's a real thing because nobody gets a 10 out of 10 every time. And not everybody's results are like, always Instagram social media worthy. So when surgeons post real results, that to me is a spectrum. There's always like you want like maybe 7 out of 10 of the results to be really, really good ones, and then some average ones are okay too. That's a truer reflection of good results. Yeah, those are some good highlights, things to look out for.
I like that. Now, what does maintenance look over time for a woman?
For a fat transfer.
Yes.
Yeah, so the nice thing about fat transfer is it's your own tissue. It's your own fat. There's not really any maintenance involved except maintaining your weight. Unlike implants, implants are a foreign body. Your body does not want it in there and is actively trying to get it out of there. So there is a need to do regular MRIs and screenings when you have implants to make sure the implant hasn't ruptured, to make sure that the hasn't formed a capsule, to screen for cancer. With fat grafting, the breast is made up of mostly fat and some breast glands. So there's no difference between the fat that is already in the breast and the fats everywhere else in your body. It's your own fat tissue. So there's no maintenance per se to say like to do checks or to do screenings or imaging, anything like that. Of course, everybody for the purposes of general breast health, it's important to do a breast exam to screen for breast cancer and things like that. But specifically with fat grafting alone, there's no increased screening or maintenance or anything like that. The fat is just like the fat everywhere else in your body, which means that if you gain weight, the fat will grow in size, and if you lose weight, it'll decrease in size. So some patients they like to play with that to adjust their own breast size with their weight, but it's not really so much a maintenance thing; it's just kind of aesthetic preference.
I like that. Now, and when it comes to emotionally, like why do some people feel amazing after surgery and others feel anxious or even, they feel like, oh, did the surgery go perfect? And they get, a little, out of shape and doubtful.
Yeah, great question. I think there's two reasons. First of all, there's what's happening during the surgery, and the other, and well, I'll talk about it. One, what's happening during the surgery, and the other thing is what's the mindset going into surgery? People talk about set and setting as it relates to different kinds of medicine or psychedelic practices and stuff like that. It's the same with surgery, set and setting. What's happening in the setting, which is the surgery that you're about to have, and then the set, which is the mindset. So, general anesthesia, which is when you go to sleep for surgery, is associated with a lot more physical risks and mental health risks after surgery. It's a known thing. You're using very powerful medication to take your brain offline, and then you come back all foggy and have brain fog, and all sorts of things happen afterwards. Increased surgery time and time under general anesthesia. So the more time you have general anesthesia and go to sleep for surgery, the more you're at risk for those things. Compared to local anesthesia, when you're not going to sleep, but you're taking some light medication to help numb your body and numb the areas that are being treated, is not associated with the same risk afterwards. Even more so, there's certain medications like ketamine, when used during surgery, can actually counteract the negative depressive effects and anxiety that's associated with surgery and actually kind of give you a boost afterwards. So for that reason, when I do surgery, I do not put patients to sleep for the majority of procedures, especially breast fat transfer. And I use a sedation protocol with ketamine as part of a surgery ceremony protocol to help patients feel better after surgery, take less pain medication, and have an overall better recovery. So that's one. That's number one why I think patients do might have anxiety after surgery is the anesthesia. The other reason is mindset. What's the state of mind when you're going into surgery? Are you anxious at baseline? Are you stressed about your surgery? Are you worried about your aftercare? The number of things that you have to worry about outside of just healing and recovering will have a big impact on how you feel after surgery. So that's another reason why I have developed a surgery ceremony protocol, which is a way to support patients mentally after surgery and before surgery. So they work with a therapist to do ketamine-assisted psychotherapy for a few sessions, which gives them a really targeted, focused approach to understand why they're doing the surgery, to address any fear, anxiety, or trauma around an operation. And so when they go into surgery, they're feeling a lot more calm, a lot more grounded. They have certain tools like mantras and different kinds of music that they can experience during the surgery that helps them feel more relaxed and calm. So
I like
ultimately,
that.
it's set and setting mindset and also the type of anesthesia used during surgery, which will impact how you feel afterwards.
That's awesome. That was the first time I ever heard of, a cosmetic doctor that does implants ever do something like that. And it sounds pretty amazing. And I like that idea a lot. Because and can you go a little bit into ketamine? Because a lot of people hear about it, they're interested about it. So and maybe you can go a little bit more so people understand it.
Sure. Yeah. So I haven't, again, I haven't used breast implants in over 10 years. All I ever, my only association with them is removing breast implants and using fat as an alternative. And what I noticed among the patient population of women who are coming to see me after wanting their implants out or who have implants is that the surgery itself, the process that they went through, is a bit traumatizing. Whether it was deciding to get the implants and then deciding to get them removed, the whole thing, they were no longer the woman that they were when they decided to get the implants, and yet they're still carrying around this weight, this literal weight on their chest that they want to remove. So there's a strong psychological component that wasn't being addressed. And the interesting thing about ketamine is that it's becoming more and more popular in the psychotherapy community as a tool to help address some issues and awareness of image things related to the body, as well as treatment of depression, anxiety, OCD. And the reason it works that way is because ketamine is known as a dissociative anesthetic. So it allows you to, from the psychology perspective, essentially to disconnect from that which is causing you pain or difficulty or making you upset. and allows you to objectively analyze it. Now, I'm not a psychotherapist, so I'm not going to pretend to speak from that angle, but I've observed it enough times to witness what patients go through. And patients are able to very calmly describe and analyze situations that would have previously caused them stress. And doing it with a skilled psychotherapist who's trained in ketamine-assisted psychotherapy is it's like watching magic. I've been very blessed and fortunate to work with some amazing therapists, one by the name of Dr. Kat Meyer. She's here in Los Angeles and is an absolute guru. And I've just watched her transform the lives of my patients before surgery. So things will happen like, patients will be quite stressed and anxious about undergoing another surgery to address their breasts for cosmetic purposes after they've had their implants removed, and for fat transfer. So there is anxiety and trauma there. And she helps bring them to a place where they're calm, they're excited, and they have certain tools that they can anchor in during the surgery, because I do the surgery awake, like mantras or intentions. And all of those things are so powerful. And it's a combination of ketamine and the therapy that helps them get there. Now, ketamine is a special medication because outside of the world of psychotherapy, its foundation is in anesthesia and medicine as a pain medication, as a way to disconnect the body's association with pain to use it for short procedures. So ketamine was popularized actually in the emergency room for children. Yeah. So when a little kid has a broken bone or a cut on their face or hands or something like that, in residency, I would do a lot of pediatric trauma and things like that. So ketamine was actually the ideal anesthetic to use in the emergency room because it can be done, it's short acting, only lasts about 15, 20 minutes. It can be given intravenously, and it doesn't really mess with the heart and lungs like other medications. So you can really put somebody in a very calm, deep, relaxed state where they're present. They don't need to be intubated. They can breathe on their own, their heart beats on their own, and yet they're disconnected from pain, which is sort of ideal if you're trying to do a procedure to help fix a broken bone or something like that. And then it's been more commonly used in anesthesia recently, and I've started using it as the main anesthetic for my surgeries while I do procedures for patients who aren't fully asleep, for that reason. What's nice about it too is all the, in addition to the medical benefits, are the psychotherapeutic benefits. So it's good for, like I said, depression, anxiety. And then on top of that, more recently, it's been studied for pain. So I noticed that after I use ketamine for surgery for my patients, they take far less pain medication. They're a lot more comfortable and they get back on their feet in a faster recovery.
I love that. I love that. I think that's such a great alternative than using anesthesia. Now, when it comes to fat grafting, so now let's talk about the alternative that you mentioned. When it comes to fat grafting to the breast instead of implants, can we break down in plain English so people have a better understanding what fat grafting is really is?
Sure.
Because people hear about it, but they don't really know a lot about it or understand it fully.
Yeah, I'll walk you through step by step. So basically what fat grafting is, you take fat from one part of your body and you put it somewhere else. It's been around for a long time. Fat grafting to the breast specifically means you take fat from parts of your body and you use it to shape and sculpt the breast. Literally like I'm painting with a paintbrush, like a sculptor, it's like planting little seeds. Now, there's three steps to the procedure. The first is I numb all of the areas where we're going to collect the fat from. And the procedure is really like a two for one benefit. It's a twofer. One, we take fat from one part of the body, so you get to sculpt and shape perhaps an area that you'd like to look differently. Most commonly, it's the waist and hips or the abdomen or the arms, the inner thighs. These are all areas where we can get fat. And you might be thinking, well, what if I don't have enough fat? The truth is, everybody has a pretty healthy layer of fat in all those areas. And as long as you take a small amount of fat from all those areas, you can collect enough fat to do a fat transfer. It's very rare that I have to turn a patient down because they don't have enough fat. Once all of those areas are numbed, and they're numbed by a special tool that goes underneath the skin and it kind of stretches out the skin and numbs it out. Once those areas are numbed, I then go in with special tools. It's called liposuction. So it's a tool that vibrates really fast and shakes and mechanically takes out little tiny bits of fat throughout the area. And so in that area, I'm sculpting, I'm removing the fat and also making, I can help, define the abs, define the waistline, create more curves. My patients love calling it a snatched waist. The arms, we can create more definition from the arms, from the sides, sculpt out the arms or the inner thighs. Really just about anywhere you can take fat from the armpits, the lower back, even the back of the knees. Anyway, I collect fat from those areas. The fat is collected in a canister, and then there's seven steps. There's seven things I do to the fat, which I can get to later, but I basically process the fat to increase the survival of the fat. And now what's in that canister? It's not just, what does it look like? It's not just like oil, which is also a type of fat. It's fat cells and in the architecture and the connective tissue that they're surrounded with. So it's like literal little plants, like little seeds. And that fat gets reinjected in the third part of the operation, in the procedure, where I use a special technique to paint with the fat within the area of the breast in 3 dimensions. So it's literally like sculpting. Yeah. There's seven things that I do to the fat to increase the fat survival. So earlier we talked about, like, what are the myths about fat? People say, well, the fat doesn't survive. That's not true. Not all of the fat survives, and about 50 to 80% can survive. But there's seven things I've outlined that each step increases the fat survival by a few percentage points, and that helped me bump it from like 50 up to the 70s and 80s, and sometimes even higher, hopefully to the 90s. So the first thing is, I collect the fat that I collect never leaves the canister. It stays in a closed container system. And that's really important, because a lot of surgeons will open the canister, they'll play with the fat, they'll move it, they'll do all this stuff to it. Every one of those steps introduces an opportunity for bacteria to get in there and to cause problems. That's number one. Number two is, I add antibiotics to the fat to minimize any risk of infection. Number three is, I treat the fat with a special type of red light therapy. It's called infrared or near infrared light. And what that does is, if anyone out there uses red light therapy, it's good for the face, it's good for the skin, it's good for the body. It's actually amazing for the fat cells when they're outside of the body. It helps increase their survival before they go back in. It's like supercharging them before they go back. Number four, I add a special thing to the fat called plaxomer. It's basically a substance that helps heal any little damaged fat cell. And which is a newer thing that's out on the market that really helps increase the fat survival. Oh, another thing, I also collect the fat under very low pressure suction. If you can imagine sucking through a straw, if you suck through a straw really, really strong, you can actually break apart what's going through the straw. But if it's a gentle suction, it doesn't hurt the fat cells. That's number five. Number six is, I inject the middle two-thirds of the fat. So if I have this much fat, if I have 100 cc's of fat, I'm only injecting the middle two-thirds. The reason for that is, that middle two-thirds is what's the richest in stem cells. And stem cells are the things that help regenerate the skin and the tissue. So when we're injecting fat, it's not just the volume and the stuff we want, it's all the good stuff that comes with it. It's literal stem cells that help new blood vessels grow. They help regenerate the skin and tissue. And the very last step, step number seven, is, when I'm injecting the fat, I use something called a micro droplet technique. So it's a little special vibrating device that drops in little tiny bits of fat instead of these big globs that are normally done. And those little drops of fat are like a little tiny seed that helps the fat grow, instead of like planting like a big blob of seeds.
Oh, I
So yeah,
love that.
so that's breast fat grafting in a nutshell. But it's basically three steps: numb the area, remove the fat, transfer the fat.
I love that. Now, who is a great candidate and who isn't?
A good candidate for breast fat transfer is somebody who, first of all, has already done some research, which is helpful, because having a little baseline of what's out there is a great place to start. Somebody who's selected some inspo pics, it's very helpful to know what you're looking for in terms of shape and size. Usually a patient who's looking for a moderate, so not a huge increase in size, so about a cup to maybe even 2 cups is okay. Although it's not always possible to get 2 cups in one fat transfer, but in a second round, it's quite possible. A patient usually is a good candidate if they do not need a significant breast lift. Sometimes patients come and see me and they think they want a fat transfer, but what they really need is a breast lift, just to help restructure and reshape the volume of the tissue. Also, somebody is a good candidate if they don't have any a strong family history of breast cancer, or don't have any abnormal mammogram results. That's usually a pause or a hold for me when that's going on, because I always want safety as a priority, and I want patients to go through and get the care they need. But yeah, the most important is somebody who's looking for a natural aesthetic to the breast, not like implants, and also doesn't want to go sleep for the procedure is a good candidate.
I love that.
Yeah,
Now,
I was gonna say
we
one other thing, actually,
talked.
just
Oh,
before I
go
forget. Yeah,
ahead.
so the reason sometimes a second round of fat transfer is actually better than just a single one is because, after that first round of fat transfer, the stem cells in the fat, they cause all these new blood vessels to grow in, and the tissue gets bigger. What that means is, with the second round, the fat Well, more of the fat will survive. So sometimes when patients want to go significantly bigger in size, like let's say from an A cup to a C cup, it's doable, but it will take more than one round. And the second round, usually done 3 months after the first round, is a better, we'll have more fat survive.
Oh, okay. So it's good to wait about 3 months and then do the next. Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. Now, we talked a little about this already, but could we just go over again, what results are realistic for people? So they understand that, better understand than of, what to expect and not to over, think that, they're going to have this or that or the other thing.
Yeah, great question. So, looking at patients who have implants as an inspiration can sometimes be misleading because the two things that stand out for patients with implants is that they have a really large artificial, what we call upper pole. The upper part of the breast looks really inflated, and no natural breast really ever has that. That's something that only comes with implants. So that's one thing to look for, and also the overall shape and size. The natural aesthetic of a breast, if you look at it from the side, is a slope with a round curve. If you look at it from the profile, that's the natural aesthetic. That's achievable with fat grafting. Implants don't always do that. They create more of that natural, kind of like bubble look.
Now, what's the biggest misunderstanding people have about it that you find?
I think it's that the fat won't survive. A lot of patients come to me and say, like, oh, I heard I shouldn't do this because the fat won't survive. And I understand that's because a lot of the pr probably that means a lot of the people out there getting fat transfer are going to places where maybe the technique isn't as great, or they're not going to surgeons that are as experienced. So it just gets a bad rap.
So, what does recovery and outcome depend on, really?
Great question. Recovery outcome is super important, and I have very specific post-op instructions. The whole process in surgery is designed to be as easy as possible. So for the first 2 weeks, no exercise. The first 2 weeks after surgery, you're wearing compression garment. You'll be swollen for about a month, and the other, and also for 2 weeks, no pressure on the breasts. So you have to sleep on your back, and you can't wear a tight bra. Also, extremely important, no smoking of any kind. And basically, after 4 weeks, whatever fat has survived is going to stick with you for life. As far as recovery goes, there's certain things that patients must do and certain things they must avoid. Must avoid any kind of smoking or nicotine exposure. And then the other is avoid any pressure on the breasts. As far as things that are helpful, red light therapy after surgery is very helpful. Hyperbaric oxygen is very helpful. And lymphatic massage, not on the breast, but to the other areas and parts of the body that have been treated.
Oh, wow. And basically having a clean lifestyle, give your body time to recuperate and adjust changes.
It's also not the time to lose weight right after surgery. It's a time to maintain weight.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, here's the big one. If someone is choosing fat grafting because they want natural, what does natural actually mean in a surgical context?
Great question. We live in a day and age where we question if anything is real because of AI and this and that. And natural, you could say natural, the most natural thing is to do nothing. When I say natural as it relates to surgery, what I mean is no foreign bodies, no implants, no nothing that is in your own tissue is going back inside your body. And natural is also we're using what's the most anatomically correct solution for the problem we're trying to fix. A breast doesn't have a lack of volume because it doesn't have enough implant. Nobody's deficient in implant. An implant's an artificial thing that's created to put in to try and fix the problem, which is, and it's not even really a problem. It's just saying that the solution we're trying to use to create volume is fat, and that's what the breast is made of. It's made of fat and gland. So when I say natural, I say it's like solving it with the most anatomically correct problem. There's many different parts of plastic surgery where this applies to. The same goes with I have this same philosophy with facelifting. With facelift, the solution or the problem is not a lack of threads in the face. That's why threading was really popular. I don't know if you ever heard of that in the face. It was, but it's more of because of the facial musculature has gotten weak, so it needs to be tightened up, and that's what a facelift is about. So same thing for the breast. It's not that there's a lack of an implant; it's that there's a lack of volume from the fat. So let's use the fat.
I like that. Now, most people make the decision emotionally and then they try to justify it logically. So let's flip that. So let's give listeners a simple decision framework. So what should they decide first? Look, feel, longevity, safety, or lifestyle? Making you think there.
Yeah, I'm thinking because it's like the way I'm thinking about question is like, what's more important, the psychological approach to surgery or the physical outcome they're looking for? I think the psychology is most important. Being in a good, healthy state of mind, because that's always a lot harder to get to, and surgery doesn't always get you there. So when I have patients come in and they're a hell yes to surgery, meaning like they're determined, they understand the risks, they understand the benefits, and they know what they're getting into, that to me says that they've thought it through and they're in a good place mentally. And they're prepared for a great outcome, and they're ready for it. The alternative is you could have the best outcome ever as a patient, but you could not feel in a good place mentally, and you will be extremely unhappy with the results. And that's really unfortunate to have an amazing, objectively amazing result, but not be in a good place mentally, so you're not happy about it. So I think it's yeah, that's if I'm understanding your question correctly, I think that's what it is. It's about being in a good place mentally. And then the physical stuff, so like the look, the feel, and stuff like that.
Now, what should they prioritize if they're terrified of regret?
I'm of the mindset that the more information you have, the more informed decision you can make. You should never work with a surgeon who's trying to push you to surgery or their office is pushing you. I encourage all my patients to go get second opinions, third opinions, fourth opinions. You want to do as many consultations possible, so when you're finally about to do your surgery, you're like, yeah, that was the right move. Other things for regret, you know, that's part of the challenge with implants is like once you choose a size, it's sticking with you. That size, the implant's not getting smaller. And often patients get sort of pushed to do larger implants than they want. And that's just really not a thing with fat grafting. But most importantly is choosing the right relationship of the guy that you're going to work with, which is your surgeon, and making sure that you've done your research and you're confident that you want to work with them. That's the best way to avoid regret. And actually really checking in with yourself, saying, why am I doing this? Who am I doing it for? Yeah.
That's true. Now, what's the difference between I want to look better and I need to feel different?
That reminds me of something I say often about plastic surgery, which is plastic surgery is an I want experience, not an I need experience. Nobody truly needs plastic surgery unless it's strictly for form or function. It's more of a luxury want experience. It'd be great to have this, but it's not necessary. It's not like somebody who needs, let's say, a knee replacement or a heart surgery. However, that doesn't minimize the fact that having a physical issue that really causes a change in your psyche or makes you think a lot or makes you feel less confident doesn't still have a strong impact on your day-to-day life. I've literally seen plastic surgery transform people's lives. They become somebody completely different for the better, and they go on to do amazing, incredible things because they feel more confident in their body. So the difference between I want this versus I need this is often a question of form and function. I need this as somebody who might have trouble breathing because they have a deviated septum, versus I want this as somebody says, you know, like I don't like the shape of my nose and I wish it was different. As it relates to breast surgery, it could be I need this, you know, I just went through breast cancer and I don't feel I have my femininity anymore because of a mastectomy, and I need a surgery that's going to help restore that. Versus I want this, which is I feel like my breasts aren't the shape or size that I want, and I want them to be bigger. They're subtle, or in some cases not actually not that subtle differences, but they're different, and it's really such an individual process. There's no, you know, the pain or difficulty that somebody might feel because they have small breasts might actually be worse than somebody who's had breast cancer, and has recovered from it, just because it's such an individual thing. And I'm never in a position to say like you should or shouldn't do this. It's more of I understand that it's a deeply individual process, and I will have compassion and grace for you on your journey no matter where you're at. And I hope that I can provide the right information to help you make the most informed decision, but I'll never push you one way or another.
Oh, I love that. That's so important. I feel it's so important to have a doctor that steps back, lets you make the decision, and doesn't push you, and you have time to think it through and do your research and so forth. I like that a lot. Now, what do you wish every patient would understand before booking anything?
Before booking surgeries, My goal is that the patient and I have the same level of understanding. I mean, it's really like a kind of a dance that's happening during consultation. I'm trying to explain what I think is possible while understanding what the patient's needs and wants are, what they're explaining, what they're looking for. And my hope is that my vision of what's possible for the patient aligns with what they hope they see as possible. And if that's a match, surgery is going to be a slam dunk. It's going to be an absolute success, knock it out of the park. If there's a mismatch, if the patient is envisioning an orange and I'm describing an apple, and somehow we both miss that, that's not good. The patient's not going to be happy, and I'm going to miss the mark. So when booking consultation, when doing consultation, my goal and what I'm hoping for is that we're on the same page. And that's why a conversation is important. That's why meeting either virtually or in person is important. Looking at pictures, the more I can get a vibe of what's happening, what we're looking for, the better service I can provide.
I love that. Now, surgery is a transformative journey. Like, this is the part that nobody expects. Some people think surgery will fix instantaneously the confidence of an individual, but confidence is an inside job. Surgery can support it, but it can't replace it. I want to talk a little bit about transformation. What changes for people have you seen, psychologically after they do something like this?
There's a few stories that stand out. Most of the stories are patients who are young moms who have gone through this arc of being professionals and then becoming moms and coming back to their bodies to restore their femininity and their sense of confidence. And one story in particular that stands to mind is a patient who worked with a therapist beforehand, and her mantra was coming home to my body. And I'll never forget, as soon as surgery was done, she whispered to me, she's like, I finally feel like I'm home in my body. And it was such a nice thing to hear, but also to really receive and see that she truly felt that. And she'd landed back, she was there. And to think that an experience can create, like what more important sense of home do we have in our body? Like, forget physical home, forget physical place. Like your home, your OG body, your OG home is your body. And to feel like you're not home in your own body is kind of a scary thought, but what an amazing homecoming to be able to be brought back there. So that's, stories like that are stand out to me, and there's many different variations of that. Another experience was a woman, a patient I took care of who unfortunately lost her husband, and she was left with two small children. She was very, very scared to undergo surgery, but she really also wanted it for herself. It was like a chance to sort of like step into this new identity after losing her husband. And but she was terrified. She was so worried that something was going to happen, that she wasn't going to make it. And it was completely unexpected. But during the therapy and during the surgery, the ketamine component of it actually, she said, helped her tap into communicating with her husband who had passed. Yeah, and she was able to get some like real sense of closure there, and it was beautiful, completely unexpected. Nobody thinks they're going for plastic surgery and they're going to connect to a deceased family member, but she did, and she came out of it. And she said, like, yeah, he was really happy that I was doing this for me, that this was a chance for me to re reconnect with myself. And yeah, it was an emotional day in the operating. Everybody was quite touched by it. So yeah,
I feel very emotional now when you talk about that. Wow, that is
yeah.
something. Do you see that some people get emotional afterwards, even after they're happy?
Yeah. Oh yeah. In fact, it's what inspired me to do this surgery ceremony work, to call it that and to think about it like that. Most people, surgery and ceremony, the reason I chose those words is because they're not so different. They're not unrelated. A ceremony is any process where there's a desire to make a change, whether it's psychological or physical. There's often an altered state, whether it's through medication, whether it's through meditation or deep focus. And then there's often a guide or a journey that you have to go through. Now, you can describe surgery the same way. You can say surgery, there's a desire to make a strong physical change. There's often an altered state, which is the medication that's used to put you to sleep or stay awake. And then you have to go through the journey. You have to get through the process, and there's usually a guide. In this case, it's a surgeon. So surgery and ceremony are very similar. The way it came about is I had done this really deep sort of like ceremony retreat, and there was a woman who at some point during the retreat had like a total meltdown. She was crying, sobbing, wailing. She'd really had like an ego
Right.
break experience. Everything
And
that she'd been so tightly holding on to in her life kind of unraveled, and the emotions came up and she was processing it.
right.
About 10% of the time when I do my procedures awake, patients will have a similar experience. These medications come online, whether it's ketamine or something else, they come online. They sort of patients' anxiety level is high before surgery. Their
Yeah.
guard comes down because of the medication and everything they've been holding on so tightly. I mean, think about all of us out there. We're all holding on to stuff tight to function in the world, whether we like it or not. No matter how much meditation you do, no matter how much green tea you drink, we're holding on tight to get through life.
Yes. Yeah.
Most of us. And it makes sense because we live in this world where we like a lot of stuff's going on to, get in your car, sit in the traffic, get to work, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So patients are holding on tight, and when the medications hit, the walls come down and all the stuff just bubbles up to the surface. So about 10% of the time when patients are on the operating table, they may have a very powerful emotional reason. They may start crying. And it used
Yeah.
to kind of I used to think, oh man, they're just going through something. Let me give them some space. So I
Yeah.
would leave the room, turn off the lights, and just let them kind of get calm and ground and soothe themselves. But now
Yeah.
I lean into it. I really lean into it. I understand that we're all holding on to so much, and this is an opportunity to not just release whatever you're holding on to before the surgery and transform the body, but like, hey, let's do some inner work.
Right.
And so patients do get emotional, and that was what prompted me to do the surgery ceremony. I realized, oh, this is, there's 100 million surgeries done a year, 100 million.
Wow, that's
If
amazing.
even 10% of those people had an intentional experience around the surgery because of the
Yeah.
potential emotional, psychological release that could be happening, that's a massive amount of people. 10 million
Yes.
people a year having a major transformational shift in their psychology because somebody took the time to bring awareness to the fact that this is a major life-changing event that they're having surgery. It's a
Yeah.
big deal. So
Wow.
yes, patients often have an emotional response. It can be afterwards too, but I find like before or after the surgery is pretty common.
Now, what does identity shift look like in a real patient?
It's the glow up. It's the
Yeah.
glow up. I there's certain things I look for, and I've seen enough times. I've done probably close to a little over 5,000 procedures at this point. So when patients come in for the follow-up, there's two very consistent signs I see, and I call it the glow up. The first is makeup. The makeup just hits different. It just looks different. They've got a new haircut, they got a new style. Like it's usually at their 3 month or 6 month follow-up visit. They're coming in
Yeah.
with this like confident kind of swagger. They got the vibe. It's sunny outside, even though it's raining. They got lipstick on. They got makeup. You can really tell in the photos. The other part of the glow up is the confidence. There's just like an energy. Just the other day, I did a follow up for a patient with an explant. Explant glow up is completely different. So once the breast when the implants are removed, we call that explant surgery,
Yeah.
and that glow up is different than all the others because, like I said before, it's literally a weight that's off the chest.
Yeah.
And there's a lightness about my patients who have had an explant. They literally feel like they're floating. Like there's just like this kind, joyful, playful, light energy.
Yeah.
And I see that pretty consistently. I mean, I saw it just a few days ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, why do some people feel more empowered and some people feel more exposed?
With surgery?
Yeah.
Yeah. It probably has to do with the reason why they're having a surgery in the first place. If somebody's coming at surgery from a place of confidence, saying like, this is what I want, this is for me, this is what I need, they're more
Yeah.
likely going to feel empowered. If
Yeah.
they feel like they're getting pushed to do the surgery, either by a family member or their friends, or it's just like, they're feeling very self-conscious,
Yeah.
that's more likely to come from a place feeling exposed.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And how can patients prepare mentally so they feel, their change feels grounded and not destabilizing?
Yeah. So the best way to prepare that, so I give patients a guide to prepare beforehand with intention setting and journaling and things like that. But working with the therapist that I work with is great. They are a true guide and ally to help you get as ready for your surgery as possible.
Yeah.
The other way to do it is you want to make sure your support network's a good support network. Not everybody who's your close friends and family is actually going to be good for you before and after surgery, because sometimes they
Right.
might mirror back your anxiety to you. And if you're stressed about something, they might be like, oh, why are you doing this? You don't need to do this anyway. You look great. That's not what you want to hear just before you've committed to doing a big operation. You want somebody who's going to be supportive. You want somebody who's going to stand by you before and after the surgery. Also, after the surgery, last thing you want to hear is like, oh, why did you do this? You don't need to do this. Because you're already kind of down and not feeling great after an operation. Last thing you want to do is somebody to tell you you shouldn't have done it. So, to answer your question is having professional support, a therapist is great. Doing your own work with journaling and tension setting is helpful. And I provide my patients some info on that. And then having a good support network, good friends and family that are going to reflect positivity back to you.
I love that. Now, what are some of the signs, that signs that someone should pause before proceeding?
Great question. If you've had many operations for the same area, those are usually red flags that I look for to say, hey, if this is your second, third, fourth, fifth operation, and you're trying to continually fix the same spot, it's probably not going to work. If it didn't work the second time, it's way less likely to work the third time and probably not going to work the fourth or fifth time. So repeated operations there. Another sort of thing to look out for is rushing to surgery. If you just heard about this yesterday and you're planning to be on the operating room table tomorrow, probably a little too fast. Although that being said, there have been cases in patients where like they've been researching this thing for years and years, and they've been on a wait list, and then something opens up, and then they're ready. But usually, like going from booking quickly is you want some time and space to happen before.
I like that. Now, give the listeners something that they can take away with them, like a mindset, a checklist, or a sense of control.
It's really simple. My mission on this planet is to share and spread love. You are love.
I love that. I
Yeah,
love that.
I'm not going to make it any more complicated than that. Everybody can interpret that any way they want. At any point in life, throughout your day, just remember that you are a source of infinite, radiant love and positivity. You are love.
Oh, I love that so much. Now, can you tell people about the procedures and the services that you provide at your practice?
Sure. So I would say, hyper specialized. I am board certified in plastic and reconstructive surgery. I've done many different kinds of procedures and trained in the full spectrum of plastic surgery. But my focus as an aesthetic plastic surgeon is on the breast and body. And specifically, I remove breast implants. I do breast lift procedures. I do breast reduction procedures. And I do fat transfer to the breast instead of implants. I also do a non or minimally invasive non-surgical lifting of the breast with radiofrequency. That's a tool called Renuvion. And I do sculpting of the body all the way around. So liposuction of any part of the body is my expertise. So that's the arms, the torso, the abdomen, Lipo 360, really sculpting the body with to your natural anatomy by removing fat. I also do fat grafting to the buttocks and the face and the hands, but most commonly to the breast. That's really my focus. Another procedure I also do is tummy tucks for patients who have loose skin, and addressing removing loose skin anywhere in the arms or the abdominal area or the inner thighs. Those are all the procedures I do, but most commonly what I do is breast fat transfer, and that's what I'm best known for. So removal of implants, lifting the breast, and fat transfer to the breast.
I love that. I love that. Now, where can people find you?
Yeah, best places to find me online. My website is auraesthetica.com, and I'll drop it for you in the show notes. That's spelled AuraEsthetica, auraesthetica.com. My Instagram is Dr. John.K. That's DrJon.K. And for anyone listening, I'm happy to provide free consultations. Just mention the Stacey Shalemi Show, and I'd be so happy to see you either virtually or in person for a consultation in my office in Beverly Hills. I see patients virtually every week from all over the world, and also take care of patients from all over. They fly in to our office here in beautiful Beverly Hills.
I love it. I love it. Now, before we go, one thing, if you could give three things that you want people to remember from this episode, what are three things you'd like people to walk away with and to help them, to make this decision or understand, something important and valuable from our conversation?
Sure. Number one is breast implants are not safe. Number two is fat transfer is a safe and natural alternative to breast implants. And number three, See number one.
I love it. I love it. Okay. I just want the listeners to know, if you're listening and you've been stuck in decision, remember this: cosmetic surgery isn't just a procedure, it's a choice, and it should be made from clarity, not pressure. And there are options beyond implants, including fat grafting. And the best decision is the one that fits your body, your goals, and your life. And we'll include Dr. Jonathan's information in our show notes, and you'll be able to find everything there. And this episode, I hope, has helped you feel clearer. And please follow the podcast, and because we just want you here, and we want you to learn the best procedures, the best things that could help you transform into the person that you want to be. And Dr. Jonathan, this has been such a pleasure. I really enjoyed our conversation today. You are an amazing individual, and I just love how you take everything from a holistic point of view. And not only that, but you're really here compassionately, and you really want to help people. You're not in it for the dollar bill. You're here to help people transform their lives and, make a change for the better. And that's why we wanted you on the show. And I just thank you so much. You gave such valuable information today, and you really gave people a clear understanding about fat grafting and understand the difference between, breast implants, versus fat grafting, and all the other different things that you had mentioned along our conversation. So I just want to thank you so much for being on the show today. You're just wonderful, and I really appreciate you and what you do.
Stacey, it's my great pleasure. I'm so honored that you had me on. You asked really, really good questions. You asked me a few ones I'd never heard before. So I'm always appreciative of that. And I'm really grateful to you and to your audience.
Thank you. Well, you have a great day, and thank you once again for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.